If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining me today. I'm Mike Porky Parry, and I'm delighted to say that I am once again with Ben Fletcher, Ben the Archer, Ben the Arrow Fletcher. Ben, welcome once again. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're at the Spectrum Studios, and once again, you got that view from the window. So
it's a great view, a room with a view. We're looking out onto a busy road in the Blackfriars area. Yep. There's lots going on.
Yep.
The sun is shining, and autumn is almost upon us. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Absolutely great. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Okay, folks, I want to tell you about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the UK's leading recipe box service, delivering fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. It's the easy, convenient way to cook delicious dinners from scratch every time. Choose your recipes from 19 favourites every week. Yes, that's 19 favourites every week, including rapid recipes ready in 20 minutes or less. Family favourites, British and world cuisine, and even a balanced range, under 600 calories, right? And because all our ingredients come direct from our suppliers, pre-portioned for you, there's no food waste. Now, what can I tell you about what I have enjoyed from HelloFresh? What about sweet and sour style chicken with cracked bulgur wheat and red pepper? Pork and apple burger with rosemary wedges and rocket salad. Asian style beef with zesty jasmine rice. That's right, you'd heard all that right, okay? Now, HelloFresh provides family-friendly dishes. Your kids are going to love it. Cooking together with the family, no meal planning, no shopping, no fuss dinners. Did you know most households stick to an average of only 6 recipes during their eating cycle? But here, as I've told you, you have 19. It's the spice of variety. And HelloFresh has a totally flexible subscription plan with no minimum term, so you can skip weeks, change box size and delivery addresses to suit your life and your movements within your lifestyle. Enjoy delicious moments with HelloFresh. Head to hellofresh.co.uk. Choose a box, a delivery slot, and add your favourite recipes, delicious dinners from scratch. HelloFresh are offering our listeners £60 off, OK? This is the offer, £60 off. That's made up of £15 off your first 4 boxes, OK? Visit www.hellofresh.co.uk and enter the code PLANETPORKY at the checkout to enjoy delicious dinners without the drama. Let me repeat that for you one more time. HelloFresh are offering our listeners £60 off. That's £15 off your first 4 boxes. Visit www.hellofresh.co.uk and enter the code PLANETPORKY at the checkout to enjoy delicious dinners without the drama. Now, you will have come across, because the investigation's still ongoing, this story that broke, it broke in last Sunday's newspapers, that Boris Johnson, when he was Mayor of London, used to take a friend on overseas missions, who then was the beneficiary of grants from the Mayor's office, or not the Mayor's office, but certainly from the London mayoralty, if you see what I mean, you know,
yeah.
to provide services for London and that kind of stuff. The lady concerned is called Jennifer Arcuri. She's a married lady. and highly respectable. And the insinuation, of course, is that Boris, with his reputation as a ladies' man, going back decades, not years, but decades,
yeah.
the people still ask the question, do we know really how many children Boris Johnson's got? But the insinuation is obviously that it was more than just a friendship. Now, you and I, of course, have to make it absolutely clear in this podcast, even though we're not controlled by Ofcom laws, there is no evidence to support that.
Of course.
And therefore, it's newspaper stories. But what was your response when you saw that? Did you do the old kind of, oh, wink, wink, that's Boris again?
Well, perhaps a touch. But then you think to yourself, I think that jobs have perks.
Yes.
And never mind that side of it. Yes. I just think, like, why wouldn't you? You know, if you're Mayor of London, at that point, unattached, I think, is that right? He was unattached at that point?
So well, no, he was still married.
Oh, he was at that point.
But
okay.
You know, everybody knew by then he had a relationship with his wife, Marina, that had been tested several times over allegations of other relationships. And we also know that he has fathered another child and has had other relationships. He got sacked from a job for lying to Michael Howard, who was then leader of the Tory party,
about
a relationship he had in the office of the Spectator magazine.
The thing I find really interesting is there are some people who you just sort of roll your eyes and say, oh, that's, you know, that's Boris, that's Borky, that's Fletch, you know, whoever it might be
exactly.
when it comes to certain things. And I think to that degree, you know, our Prime Minister does get away with those sorts of things.
Yeah.
If it was another politician, another public figure, there'd perhaps be a lot more outrage.
Yes.
Say it was the leader of the opposition taking a family friend or whatever you want to call it on business trips here, there and everywhere, there'd probably be a lot more scrutiny. But there's always been a kind of charm and allure about the PM, and certainly when he was Mayor of
totally
London.
Agree. I totally agree.
I actually couldn't care less. Comes back to this thing that we spoke about before. Well, in fact, we haven't spoken about it, but you know, allegations recently about you know, sportsmen and their public or private lives versus public lives and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I just think, do you know what? Let them get on with it. If they're not breaking the law, couldn't care less.
No, I really couldn't care less. And also, as Prime Minister, he said, well, that was in days when I was Mayor of London. That's what his people say. So go back and talk to the Mayor.
Nearly a decade ago, by the way. Let's not forget.
Yeah, and go and talk to the Mayor of London's office and see what they think about the accounts that were filed at the time. There was not. But the reason I raise this, and I agree with you, I think Boris Johnson, irrespective of his politics, is a very attractive guy. You know, for the years we had Mrs. May, who was a doom-monger by the very look at her, by her body language, by her, you know, constantly I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders. I think Boris is a very refreshing guy, and that's how he gets away with it. You know,
this
is a man who wouldn't come back from Canada, where he was on holiday during the London riots, because he didn't see any need to until the pressure was put on him. He came back and then got a brush and then went around brushing streets in London. So sort of bloke he is. But the reason I raise this is it reminded me of a phenomenon in Fleet Street many years ago.
Mm.
And that was, certainly when I was at the Express in the old Fleet Street office, so you know how long ago that is.
Yeah.
And some of the people I'm talking about now will definitely be retired. They'd have to be because they were older than me then. And a lot of them are dead. But the sports reporters on all the national newspapers had a racket where, because they flew so often, they all had air miles.
Yeah.
So whenever they were doing, for instance, Spurs versus Inter Milan, or Manchester United versus Bayern Munich, or something like that, and we had big travel desks in those days, they always took their mistresses. Every one of them had a mistress, right? They had lovely houses in the home counties, four-bedroom detached houses. They had a very happy family. They had children growing up and all that. But they all took what in those days we would have called a bird with them on a foreign job, okay? And it was amazing how in the office, whenever there was a big match in a foreign capital, half the secretaries suddenly took 2 days off, half the telecoms department girls took 2 days off, and, you know, half the people, the ladies who worked in the canteen, all seemed to be off at the same time, you know what I mean? And that was because they were all overseas with the sports writers. Now, I must say absolutely here and now, it excludes anybody who currently writes for any national newspaper, okay?
Yeah.
It was a long time before that. But it was a well-known phenomenon. It was a well-known phenomenon that they could use their air. I mean, you've got to remember, if you book a bloke into a hotel in Barcelona, it's a room with a double bed. And so having one other person in there, excuse me, doesn't care, must be the air conditioning, and you pay for the airfare on, you know, on your air miles and that kind of stuff. And actually, about half of them ended up marrying their mistresses.
Really?
Yes, yes.
What era is this? Late 80s, early 90s?
Late 80s, I'd say. Late 80s. About late, certainly from, you know, between 85 and 90. So you're about nearly 30 years then. But the point I'm making is that, I don't know, is that still... It's very French, that, isn't it? It's very French to have a mistress.
Oh, it is, and, very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very Casanova, isn't it?
Yeah, which very Casanova.
Italian,
and
still.
And to this day, I laugh about it because... what would happen was, which is quite amazing, is that you would know what was going on the Wednesday or the Thursday, and on the Saturday, you could be round at one of these guys' houses having a dinner party or a barbecue on a Sunday when they're back with their wives. You know what I mean?
It's a proper double life. I mean, it's the sort of thing that, I mean, I have to be careful how I wear this. It's not the sort of thing I fantasize about. Very happily married with two young children, of course. But for me, I've said to you before about the idea of like just freedom. And there are some guys who just go off, and sportsmen particularly, can just go off and lead these lives.
Yes.
And if you're travelling all over the world, girl in every port syndrome,
and
it's doable. Yeah. And if you can live with it on your conscience, and you don't leave receipts in your pocket like some idiots do and get caught by their spouses, why wouldn't you? More to the point, it must have been a very happy workplace, because everyone's getting a little bit.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely right.
Of whatever they need.
And sometimes there were even rivalries within the newsroom about one particular girl who'd been asked to go with two different reporters, right?
Yeah.
Only to reveal that she was actually having an affair with the news editor, who was both their boss, you know, both of them bosses, and therefore couldn't make up her mind whether she wanted to spend the weekend in Vienna or, you know, a bunk up in, you know, somewhere near Fleet Street. You know what I mean? It was all going on. But look, I'm not knocking it. You know, perhaps I'm...
Did you ever take a young lady away on business or...
No,
because... Morally, you must have been above that, Porky.
Well, not... I wasn't morally above it, but let me say this. I was never a sports reporter. Now, if you are going to report on a football match at the, let's say, the San Siro in Italy, in Rome... San Siro in Italy, in Milan, I beg your pardon, then you have a complete focus as to where you're going and what job you've got to do, and you can either get a ticket for your girlfriend to come and watch the game, or if she doesn't, she would then go out for dinner with some of the other girls who'd also come, and then once the game was over, they'd all everybody meet up afterwards. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to do sort of jobs where I was covering wars. You could not really take a young girl to Tel Aviv and then ask her to put on some, war clothing, get into an Israeli tank and drive through the Bekaa Valley while there were shells exploding all around you. You know
there must have been some adventurous girls in the late 80s, would have liked the thrills and spills.
Well, maybe, but I'm not sure as adventurous as that. By the way, we were talking in our last podcast, weren't we, about TV shows, Peaky Blinders and all that kind of stuff. I see that my favourite actress, old, Jodie Comer, who plays, Villanelle in, Killing Eve.
Killing Eve, another series that's on the to-do list.
Oh, is it? You
she won
seen
awards,
it
didn't she? She won awards this week.
Absolutely, yes, she did. Absolutely fantastic. Now, what I love about Villanelle is she talks in this clipped continental accent. She's supposed to be Russian, but she lives in Paris and she's a hired assassin. And she talks like this, you know. She said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to kill you," you know. And she kills somebody, you know, and somebody who's terrified and says, "Oh, you know, please don't hurt me." "No, I won't hurt you. Honestly, I'll kill you very painlessly," you know, and all that kind of stuff and all that. So she's got this fantastic accent, this woman of mystery from Russia. And she got this award this week, and I was devastated to hear her accepting it because she's a Scouser.
Yeah.
And she and this is in New York. And she stood up and said, "I can't believe it. I didn't think I was going to get this award, so I didn't bring my mum and dad with me, and now I'm absolutely devastated." And that accent and that voice coming out of that beautiful face of Villanelle, you know, the killer, just did me down, mate.
It breaks the illusion a little bit,
doesn't it?
It
does, yeah.
But you get a lot of British actors and actresses that put on American accents. I mean, we've seen Damian Lewis in Homeland. His wife, of course, is Polly in Peaky Blinders. Yeah. Dominic West, who's been in The Wire.
Yes.
And it's interesting to me how a lot of British actors and actresses are paid to put on American voices when presumably there are a lot of American voices that could do it naturally.
You know,
it's a strange one.
You know the guy in Line of Duty? Who is like one of the main characters? He's the one who got thrown. Have you seen Line of Duty?
I haven't again.
Oh, okay.
So much TV is on my to-do list.
Well, this guy gets beaten up as he gets out of lift, and he's thrown down three flights of stairs, and he ends up in a wheelchair. And all that. but he's got a beautifully English clipped accent. And yet, when I saw him interviewed on Piers's show, GMB, you know, ahead of the new series, he's as Scottish as you can imagine. These people are very talented.
They are.
Very talented to be able to do all that. Now, talking about talent and all that, are you an ABBA fan?
No opinion here or there, really.
Really?
I'm just trying to think about when I'd put an ABBA record on. I don't own any, but if it came on the dance floor, I'd probably get dragged on by the wife.
Okay. But late at night at home, you had a few friends around. I always play the Beach Boys, right?
Yeah, okay.
I love the Beach Boys, right, and all that. But I would always play ABBA if ABBA was there because I loved ABBA. Now, what I'm trying to say to you is I don't like going to concerts. Do you go to concerts?
I used to, but not so much now because it's too much aggro. Too expensive, too much aggro. Getting out of places like Wembley is a total nightmare. A lot of acts. Madonna is famous for being late for her gigs.
Didn't go on until 10:30 in our last gig. I read that. I don't know where I read it, but so you know, it was scheduled to start at 9 and she came on at 10:30.
And people have got trains home to get. You spent hundreds of pounds.
Isn't that hopelessly insulting to the people who pay your wages?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't bother now. I mean, there are very few acts that I want to see now that, well, one, that are living, and two, that I actually would be prepared to part with the cash. I mean, I'd love to see Elton John, but how much is that going to be? And again, like, where would you do it?
£200, I think.
Well, yeah.
One of my brother-in-laws is a big Elton John fan. They go and they get decent, like, box type thing, you know, a seat, £200 or £300.
Which I'd be prepared to pay, but then for me, to be honest, getting out of Wembley or wherever it would be, would just do my head in.
Exactly.
You're surrounded by idiots.
Well, the reason I mention this is because ABBA have now taken their, like, presentation to the public to a new level. I don't know if you've heard about this, but Mamma Mia obviously has been one of the most successful West End shows for a number of years.
Been. And films too.
And films, absolutely, well done. There's two of them, I think, hasn't
there? Yeah.
Well, what they've now done is what Benny and Bjorn, the two songwriters in ABBA, have done, who, of course, famously were married to the two girls in an incredible sort of arrangement. They now, and this has started in Scandinavia, it's come to this country, they perform Mamma Mia in a huge live restaurant, which the O2 is turned into.
Mm.
So you don't sit in seats and look down on a stage. You are on stage and you are eating in Mamma Mia and the people serving you are the performers.
Characters.
They're the performers. So one minute you think you're being served by a proper waiter or waitress, you know, and you've ordered your food, and then an ABBA chord strikes up, the start of a new song. They throw their, you know, their trays away, rip their clothes off, and then they're dancing around your table and all that.
That's incredible.
That'd be too much for me.
I feel like we should have had a spoiler alert in front of that in case anyone's planning on going. But no, absolutely right.
Yeah.
But then you get immersive theatre like that. Fawlty Towers is another famous one.
Yes.
Where you go for a meal in a restaurant and you're going to Fawlty Towers. And Basil's there.
Oh, really?
Manuel serves you. And like some people, a lucky person will be picked out. There'll be like, a rubber or there'll be something horrendous in their soup.
Yeah.
And you become part of the play. It's all this immersive theatre.
Yeah.
And yes, it's not just ABBA that could get into that.
Oh, okay.
I know what you mean, though.
The one like that I could never understand, and a mate of mine went to do it, was going into a pitch-black restaurant where all the waiters were blind.
My dad's been to that. Yeah, in London. There's one in London.
And what did he think?
He said it was the food was great. It was a very different experience. But he just said he felt a terrible sense of sadness. Because obviously, you know, the waiters and waitresses are all sort of bumping into tables and stuff because they're blind and they can't see where they're going. And he said whilst that was part of the experience and they almost want you to sort of get this sense of what it is like to not have eyesight.
Yeah.
He said it was an incredible thing that he would probably do only the once.
Yeah.
But he just said there was a terrible sense of sadness about it.
Yeah.
Because he came away sort of thinking, well, I'm here out in, you know, London. I can see the lights. Christmas, I think he said, saw the Christmas lights.
Yeah.
These guys, that's their world. And it's a really strange, very unique kind of business proposition to go and get served by blind people.
But apparently you sit in the darkness.
Total black, yeah.
So how do you see what you're eating?
Well, you don't. That's the point. And it's this whole thing about you order the food, there's no light whatsoever. I don't know if they
tell
you.
And by the way, there's no menu, is there? They just serve you the food.
They tell you what's on the menu or they just serve you.
It's
there.
Yeah.
But then that's part of the experience because you don't know what you're getting. I mean, presumably for dietary reasons, you'd have to get a steer on things like nuts and meat and shellfish and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But I have heard of that. And that is something where you think, talk about experiencing something which you can sort of escape at the end of it.
Yeah,
very, very strange thing. My dad did that a few years ago.
I certainly wouldn't want to do it.
No, me neither.
Only because, I mean, obviously it's very challenging, but if I'm going to go out for a night and I've only got 3 or 4 hours or something like that, I don't want to have to get used to a new experience. You know what I mean?
I mean, you could argue, I mean, listen, from a from an inclusivity, diversity point of view, these guys and girls are in work.
Yeah.
They're blind people that are in work. They're working at clearly a very successful project and a very successful restaurant.
Yeah.
So they're earning money. They're clearly doing it of their own accord. That's good.
Yeah.
But I'd find that a little bit too upsetting.
Yeah.
Because you sort of think, I get to leave this and go back to my life. You don't.
Yeah, I would indeed. Now, talking about rock stars, right?
Go on.
Noticed that in the last couple of days, it was the 45th birthday of my good pal Liam Gallagher.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you know, Mr. Gallagher and I have a bit of history.
Yeah.
On one occasion, for a bit of a laugh, he was once again promoting like a new record or something, you know, which was called As You Were, I think, or something like that. And so, you know, I sent out a tweet mid-afternoon, one Saturday afternoon, a few beers and all that.
Blado in modo.
Blado in modo, absolutely right, yeah. And actually said, you know, for a pure pub singer, you haven't done too bad, but your other's done better and all that kind of stuff. Now, he must get, like, thousands of tweets. This is a guy who's got over 1 million followers but doesn't follow anybody.
Nobody whatsoever.
No. That's how arrogant he is. You know what I mean?
So he talks but doesn't listen.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. He doesn't follow anybody. He doesn't acknowledge what anybody else in the world says. But he sent me the most, I mean, outrageously rude response. You know, plenty of F words, plenty of C words. Go and play with your Noel doll because, you know, I praised his brother, but not him. And really got stuck into me. But I notice he's got a new LP out, right? And I'm told within the business, he has to put an LP out about every couple of years because compared to a lot of other rock stars, he's basically broke. But when I read the review of his new one called something like We Are Where We Are or something, is it? As You Were, yeah, something like that. Yeah, no, I think that was his first one, As You Were, or As You Are, something, oh, whatever. They all sound like Beatles songs.
Yeah. Well, that was the accusation of Oasis.
Yeah.
A lot of their songs
sound
like Beatles
songs. But I don't think
that was
fair. I think Oasis were pretty pretty progressive. I think they made, you know, songs that didn't sound like anybody else, to be honest.
I tend to agree, and that the argument will always be definitely Maybe versus What's the Story, Morning Glory. The wedding that I was at on Saturday, Dan and Rye, George and Megan, their last song was Champagne Supernova, which is one of the greatest, never mind rock and roll songs, I think one of the greatest British songs ever released.
Yeah.
It's superb. It takes me
I
back
think
to
it's terrific as well.
It takes me back to a cup final following my team in Woking, the May Sunshine in 97
right.
and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But they were a great, great band. I was actually at a venue, a wedding venue back in August, and Liam Gallagher celebrated his birthday. There, Ironhoe Park up in Oxfordshire.
Wow.
And it's this beautiful country house. And the guy that owns it runs a record label. I think it's called Fantasia.
Yeah.
And he basically effectively legalized raves back in the early 90s, right? And he sort of made his money from this record label from raves. Beautiful country house. Ironhoe House, it's called. And it's filled with stuffed animals.
Yeah.
It's just like, as you would imagine, rock and roll paradise.
Yeah.
And Liam Gallagher had his birthday there. And in one of the gents' toilets, which is absolutely ornate, kind of like, you know, leather puffed walls and it looks beautiful. There's a picture within a picture, and Liam Gallagher is sat.
Yes.
Sort of in the toilet, dressed like a gent on his birthday, and he had his birthday then. You can just imagine it.
Yeah.
But a big fan of both the Gallagher brothers. Shame they can't put their differences aside and give us a little bit more Oasis.
Yeah, well, I don't think they ever will.
No.
Sometimes partnerships break up and the damage is just so difficult you can't get back. And in fact, I think I'm right in saying that the main man in the Eagles, which might be a bit before your time, Don Henley, after the Eagles split up the first time. The Eagles, by the way, were, along with a lot of other groups, so, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, so many drugs, so many women, so much rock and roll, so nearly killed themselves several
over-indulgent.
Times. Overindulgent, that's right. And when they all, and they usually always split up about money.
Yeah.
Sometimes, well, usually money, but sometimes because the two main guys in the band, like Lennon and McCartney, resent each other's talent and resent the fact that they're not regarded as the senior person. Anyway, to cut this long story short, as we come to a break here on Planet Porky, Don Henley was asked, do you think the Eagles will ever get back together again by, you know, a rock writer? And he said, only when hell freezes over. And 20 years later, they got together and released an LP called When Hell Freezes Over.
Fancy that.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, OK, Ben, so here we are. It's Planet Porky, and thank you again for being here with me today. Let me tell you a story here, because you're a man who likes a few drinks down in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey.
Very much.
With your friends, and you follow Woking Football Club. And actually, on the day we recorded the last podcast, Sutton United, who are in the National Conference, were playing Dagenham and Redbridge, which didn't go well. Now, let me tell you about this, right? What do you think of Camra, the people who support like Real Ales?
I'm not a member, but I'm a big fan. I'm a fan of pubs, and it always upsets me. I think it's a national tragedy, and people need to be lined up against a wall and shot.
Yes.
When I see a pub turn into a supermarket,
yes,
or a pub turn into housing, or into a shopping precinct or something.
Yeah.
So Camra are basically the enemy of that. So
yes,
they're therefore
they are
my friend.
Yeah, but that's going to happen more and more.
I know.
I mean, pubs in central London in particular.
Yeah.
When I sometimes work up the BBC, it's like, you know where it is. It's just off Oxford Circus.
Yeah, I know where you are. Wogan House.
Yeah, Wogan House, that's right, and Langham Place and round there. And I used to be able to go from Oxford Street Tube Station up to the BBC and pass three pubs. And whilst I wouldn't call in and indulge on the way up, I often did on the way back, you know, when you've got a job done, a show for a couple of hours or something like that. All three now closed down, stayed closed for 6 or 8 months, then were developed and are now flats, because it is an incredibly expensive piece of real estate.
It is, and we're going to see more of it. I mean, where we are now, we're kind of on a bit of a turnpike. We're in the Blackfriars, London Bridge, Southwark.
Yes.
All the big roads kind of meet. In fact, I think we're just off Southwark High Road, aren't we?
Yes.
Looking out the window now, watching the traffic go past.
That's right.
And even in the time that we've worked together, which is sort of 11, 12 years now, at the other place, I've seen pubs close. And the one we were in recently, the Mad Hatter Hotel.
That's right.
There was one next to it. I forget what it was called. But
yeah, it was just around the corner, wasn't it?
It was a tiny little... Well, there was one on the same road. It was on a corner.
There?
I forget what it was called now, but it was a bit of a kind of local pub for local people. That didn't last very long.
Did it go very far back like that when you walked in, right to the back? I remember a pub round the corner.
There was one called the Paper Moon,
which
was on Blackfriars Road.
That's
very, very good live football pub.
Yeah.
I wasn't referring to that one, but that is another good one. The other one was called the Bryant or the something or other. Anyway, it doesn't matter now.
Yeah.
Gone. The Paper Moon, great pub, good for live football, did pizzas.
Yeah.
I thought this place has absolutely got it made. Great location, central London, gone.
Yeah.
And you look around, it's not just in London, it's all over the country. Decent boozers. There was one near me in Woking called The Star.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum and dad used to take me there, and this was back in the days when kids had to sit in the beer garden. You weren't allowed in the pub.
Right.
And if you made any sort of noise, you were out, so you had to behave yourself.
Yeah.
Though they had swings, which was curious.
Right.
Anyway, so The Star Inn turned into a co-op.
Yes.
And I remember driving back through Woking, so I don't live there now. I live in Reigate, as you know.
Yes.
But I drove back a couple of years ago, saw that The Star had gone, had no warning of this, saw the co-op sign. I thought, what's this? I couldn't believe it.
What were you going to say then?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's one for the editor. But no, I just couldn't believe it. It is always a tragedy. Even if it's a bad pub, and it's a pub that's seen... I mean, there's one near me, south of Reigate, and it was called The Angel. And it's on the main road out of Reigate, that as you head down to Gatwick. It's the A217 on the left-hand side, the Angel in Woodhatch.
Yeah, I know that.
You know the one.
And
there's traffic lights there.
And is there a nursery or garden type business on that road as you go down towards it?
I know exactly the one you mean.
So
my next door neighbour is an older gentleman. He's approaching 90. He's called Clive, and when he was a little boy, he used to stand outside the Angel, peer in, and watch Canadians playing the piano and drinking and smoking in wartime Britain
when they were stationed
in this country.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, amazing that memory, the history of that pub. And that's in the history of the pub. It's a 16th, 17th century inn by all accounts.
Yeah.
Now gone. Shut down, been shut for about 4 years. Yeah. It will become housing. And it's just a tragedy.
Of course it is.
Because all those memories, all those kind of, you know, birthdays, weddings, it's a social centre, the war era.
In a town near to me, Wetherspoons actually closed down a sports bar.
Mm.
Although Wetherspoons don't really do sports bars, but it's called the Sports Bar. They inherited it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they turned it into flats. And
that's a rare thing for Wetherspoons to shut up.
A very rare thing. Because, I mean, they have closed a few which weren't making it, but I mean, generally speaking, Wetherspoons are big supporters of pubs. But the reason I ask you this is because I came across this in one of my journals, okay?
Yeah.
A landlord whose pub failed to get in the Camra Good Beer Guide, which incidentally, I've got a brother-in-law who's in his, like, you know, late 60s now. And he's a former accountant, done very well in life. But his great joy in life is going to a pub where they serve great beers. Yeah. Not craft beers, that's a new thing, but, you know, real ale and all that kind of stuff. And he will religiously, you know, look at his camera guide, and if he's in a particular town or something like that, and go and try and find somewhere to have real ale. So listen to this. A landlord whose pub failed to get in the camera good beer guide has hit back at his drinkers, who did not vote for it, by cutting down on the real ales he's going to serve. After the Eton Cottage pub in Norwich lost its place in the campaign for real ales guide for next year, Philip Birchall put up a notice that said, "A huge sarcastic thank you to all the camera card regulars who drink in the Eton Cottage for either not submitting us for inclusion in this guide or for not voting for us." Now, I'm against this because that's almost making going out and drinking a beer almost like regulate, you know, it's like regulating it.
Well, I could have guessed, Porky, that pub was in Norwich because that is such a backward way of thinking. I mean, imagine so you're on the brink of being one in the top sort of pubs as far as camera determined. Yeah. So, what do? You don't get into it, you throw your toys out the pram, and you basically punish drinkers by taking all the real ale off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such retail suicide, isn't it? Well, I just cannot get my head around that one bit. That's the sort of flat earth backward thinking that the County of Norfolk. Renowned for, in my opinion.
Well, a camera spokesman said, "If a pub has not been chosen in this year's guide, having been represented in the past, that doesn't necessarily mean their pub or beer quality has gone down. The competition in the local area has just gotten stiffer." Now, talking about beers and all that, this is something you're going to inherit probably in 15 years' time. A guy called Kevin Maher is a columnist in the Times, okay? And a really nice lad, met him in the past and all that kind of stuff. And he wrote this week about his worries about his children and alcohol. And you'd think, you know, we were talking here about, you know, kids going out and getting... Mm-hmm. Not at all. He left his kids at home for a party. They're 18 and 19. Something like another friend of 18, 19 came round.
Yeah.
He stocked the fridge full of beer for them. He made some wine available. He came home and none of it had been touched. His children don't drink. Young 30% of people, I'm marrying this to a report I read in an education journal, 30% of students who now go to university or higher education do not drink. I mean, I do not get this.
I don't understand it. It's like you're speaking a foreign language to me. I believe it because I know it, but that to me is like, you know, they don't breathe air. They don't drink water. There's something else that they've got in their lives.
Did you go to higher education?
I did. I went to the University of Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Let me tell you, there was no drought in the flats of these
millions. Beautiful cathedral in Lincoln.
Beautiful cathedral. Yeah. Beautiful city. I owe my life to Lincoln.
Yeah.
I love Lincoln a bit, and I always will.
Yeah.
Up the mighty imps. But I cannot get my head around that, but I know this to be true because it goes on. And I think what's actually happening is...
Do we have any people up at our radio station who are following this?
We have a few teetotalers. Not many. There's one or two.
Yeah.
But they like to be... What's curious is there's one particular guy who I won't name because it's not fair.
Yes.
But he is very, I'm a teetotaler, I don't drink. But then a lot of the conversation is, oh, it looks like a nice day to be in a beer garden. And you're like, well, if you're a teetotaler, why would you be in a... What?
Yeah.
I don't understand that one bit. Yeah. But it's a damning indictment, I think, on British youngsters. There was a time when we were renowned for being rowdy and holding our own abroad and that type of thing. To hear that the number of people drinking is dwindling, I think it's disappointing. It's no wonder that pubs are struggling and, you know, the kind of Turner's Arms is turning into a Tesco.
I totally agree. Listen, do you know what Bitcoin is?
Yes, I do.
So here we are. I picked this up. Please sell off £500,000 of seized Bitcoin. I thought Bitcoin didn't exist in physical form.
Well, it doesn't. It's kind of one of these. It's pretend money, isn't it?
A Bitcoin sounds to me like a gold sovereign type thing, right? And you think that's brilliant. But the reason this has happened is the cash of Bitcoin was recovered from an individual jailed last month for offences including breaking into the computer systems of TalkTalk, the communications company, okay? Yeah. The hack cost the communications company £77 million after the personal details of 157,000 customers were stolen, right? But he's now been ordered to repay 500,000 seized Bitcoin, which the cops are going to sell. How do you sell something that doesn't exist?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like magic beans. But because it's investing in something that isn't there. So if you imagine like your bank account, you know, I've said it, we said it there in a podcast we've done previously that I never carry cash because it's all on my card.
Yeah.
So it's this idea that like I don't have any cash assets. It's all in a bank.
Yeah.
It's a figure on a screen that presumably must exist somewhere in a bank vault somewhere in the UK. Mm. But Bitcoin is like a continuation of that. So you're investing in something which isn't real. Because how can it be real? It's a made up entity.
But who puts the value on one Bitcoin?
I've no idea.
And I understand that value can range over a period of a month from $60 to $6.
And people have made huge amounts on it, and people have lost huge amounts on it. So
but how do you convert it into real cash then?
Well, I assume you withdraw it into an account, and I assume that at some point there's a facility where you say, right, withdraw from my account, that then computes to your local currency, you carry on. Yeah. You're right, it's an entity which isn't real, but then this goes on.
Bitcoin, I understand it.
And you get like virtual worlds where people have kind of got characters in pretend worlds, and they sell pretend vegetables and pretend clothes, and people will use real money to buy fake currency, to buy fake things that don't exist. And I sit and I look at the job that I do, which I think is, you know, it's football, but it's reality to a degree.
And it's certainly more realistic than... It's factually based, isn't it?
Yeah, it's factually based, but this is just all make-believe. Yeah. It's like betting on Super Mario Kart, do you know what I mean? I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah, I can't get my head around it either. What is your... what's your historical view, Ben, of the British Empire?
My historical view of the British Empire, the sun, what is it, the sun never sets on the British Empire.
That's right.
I think, as far as I'm concerned, it's something that we had that was very, very good. It's something that over the course of the years that we lost as the world progressed a little bit. Yeah. But if you were to ask me my historical view, I think it's something that up to a point, I think we should be very proud of. There were things that went on that were quite unsavoury, but there was a point when we did rule the waves. And that's part of our history, which I don't think we should be shying away from.
And do you know what? I agree with you. The first person I think that's ever agreed with me on that. Lots of things that the British Empire are responsible for improved the world.
Yeah.
And I mean, take one country in particular, Rhodesia, which became Zimbabwe, which is now an economic basket case.
Yeah.
And has condemned millions of people to poverty, to
death sometimes.
Death, fleeing the country, political oppression. It wasn't like that when the British Empire was around, okay?
I agree.
Now, I came across this amazing statistic. And of course, there were things wrong with the British Empire. Do you know the history of the East India Company? You know, the East India Company was almost a bigger entity than the British government itself. It had its own navy. Excuse me. It owned more land than the British Empire in places like India and China and the Far East and all that.
Yeah.
Amazing organisation, you know, the biggest company ever. I think it's the biggest company ever since the only company's ever owned it was Aramco, which is the Saudi Arabian oil company now, the one that got bombed and all that kind of stuff. But I came across this amazing figure. There are 269 countries in the world, and Britain has invaded all of them except 22.
Really?
There are only 22 countries in the world during our history that we haven't invaded. I mean, that is...
I can guess which one of them is. Portugal? Oh, no, we did invade Portugal.
No, Portugal are our oldest ally.
Our oldest allies, that's it. Yeah.
One of them is the Vatican City. But, I mean, you're never going to
invade... Why would you ever go after that?
Yeah. Where are you going to ever invade the Vatican City? But this guy says, all the countries we've never invaded... only a small proportion were part of the British Empire. Of course they weren't, because we invaded all the countries that weren't ours. You know what I mean? But the countries that we haven't invaded, get this, because we were quite clever. We invaded countries that had wealth or things that we needed, you know, or geographical necessity.
Yeah.
But the ones we didn't invade, for instance, were Andorra. Well, Andorra's not even a country, it's a field.
Yeah, exactly. It's a French province, isn't it?
It's like a field, you know. Yeah. When that's why I have this, you know, huge argument against friendly international or even qualifying internationals when you're playing San Marino or Andorra.
What's the point?
The size of a field, right? So we didn't invade Andorra. Belarus. I've been to Belarus.
Have you?
I went to Belarus. England played Belarus,
They did. Well, they always play Belarus, yeah.
And it is the last outpost of the Stalinist Soviet Union. It even now in Belarus, or last time I was there, about probably, I don't know, 8 years ago, you walk up to somebody with a microphone in Belarus and they put their hand over their face and they run away. You have to have a pass to work in Belarus. literally, you know, a work visa before you can go out on the streets or anything like that.
Wow.
And when we went in there, and it was a night flight, got in there about 11 o'clock, all our equipment was confiscated, and we were taken to a very sinister warehouse to recover it at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you know...
I remember you telling that story before.
Yeah, it's one of those stories. We haven't invaded Bolivia, but why would you?
Well, South America, yep. Central America, probably. I always get the two confused.
Yeah, no, South America. Burundi? I don't even know where Burundi is. It's in Africa, I presume. Central African Republic, Chad, the Congo, Guatemala, and the Ivory Coast, mostly because they didn't exist when we had the British Empire. Do you see what I mean?
If they had done, we would have been right in there, wouldn't we?
We'd probably invaded them and probably, you know, tried to take over the diamond mines or something. Somewhere called Kyrgyzstan, I suppose that's near Afghanistan and all the other stands, isn't it? Yeah, that's right, kind of stuff, yeah. Liechtenstein, well, why would you invade Liechtenstein?
Well,
that's another field, isn't it?
Well, it is.
It's
although,
a field in the middle of Europe.
Although, in recent memory, Scotland's national football team barely beat them 2-1.
Is that
it was
right?
97th minute.
Is that right?
But yeah, minnows in the footballing world, certainly.
You would know that, of course, being a sports reporter.
Very much.
Luxembourg?
Well,
you wouldn't invade Luxembourg because, again, that's a field in the middle of Europe somewhere where they had a radio station.
Exactly.
Once. Yeah.
Well, that's basically, I'm looking at all these countries and I'm thinking, well, what is the geographic or military kind of advantage of doing so?
Yeah. Mali. Mali's in Africa.
Yeah.
The Marshall Islands. We've never invaded the Marshall Islands.
Well, why would you?
Well, exactly. Well, where are they?
It'd be a bit much, wouldn't it, if the old warships turned up? You imagine sort of Nelson steaming in with the Navy and the kind of local folk think, well, okay, we have no army.
I used to love that expression, gunboat diplomacy.
Yeah.
And my history teacher at my school, he was, you know, an Oxford graduate and all, a very patrician and all that. You know, he said, well, you know, you'd say to him, how did we create the British Empire? And he said, oh, that was quite easy. We had guns and the natives didn't. You know, and it's as simple, that's the way he put it. You know, in those days, people did and all that kind of stuff. But gunboat diplomacy meant if anything ever happened, you sent a couple of gunboats and you always put the Union Jack right at the top of the mast. And the minute that the aggressors, or whoever they were, saw the Union Jack flying on the horizon, that was it. It was all over.
Yeah.
And
they knew the might of what was behind that ship. Yeah.
Exactly. And so when people say, well, that's bullying, well, it's better than like turning up without the flag flying and just shelling the country and telling them to stop. They just stopped anyway because they knew that that one flag might be a procession of 10 Royal Navy warships, you know, smashing a bit. Right. Monaco. Well, you'd be mad to invade Monaco.
Well, you'd have to go
it's
through
such
France.
A good place.
Yeah.
But it's such a good place anyway. Why would anybody invade it?
It's all right as it is, isn't it?
We never invaded Mongolia, which I'm not surprised. That's landlocked in the Far East.
And also the phrase Outer Mongolia. You might as well be in Outer Mongolia. It's
Ulaanbaatar. I'll send it nowhere. Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Outer Mongolia. Why would you go there? We haven't invaded Paraguay. Paraguay is South America, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that's
great
right.
Great goalkeeper Jose Chilavert used to knock in goal kicks, free kicks, remember? The goalie used to score long-distance goals, Jose Chilavert.
Yeah, not the...
No, that was René Higuain. He was Colombian.
But, what was that called? The
Scorpion.
The Scorpion kick, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. We've never invaded Sao Tome. I don't even know. I didn't even know there was a country called Sao Tome. And we've never invaded Principe.
Principe.
Principe. Do you know where Principe is?
I couldn't put it on a map, but
no,
I've heard of it.
But you've heard of it. Right, okay. We've never invaded Sweden, which is quite unusual because it's quite near to across the north and the North Sea.
We've not had much
it?
Luck against the Scandinavians, have we? Think about Norway and that type of thing. You know, the Vikings.
Yeah.
Maybe we're a little bit scarred by that.
By the way, it's another great TV show. The Vikings. Like Vikings.
Yeah.
Have you seen the opening one when they got Lindisfarne?
Yeah.
And you know, just massacred all the monks. Just, you know, I mean, they came from a society where your axe talks first. And everything else comes later, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Axe diplomacy.
Axe diplomacy. No, it was axe diplomacy. Well, funny enough, do you remember the monks walking along the beach when they saw the Norseman ship coming? They'd never seen ships like it with these huge, like, you know, aggressive sort of Norse heads. Tajikistan. Now, I've been to a couple of stands. I've been to... who did we play in the football? Was it... It wasn't Afghanistan, it was Keflanistan or something.
Which tournament was that?
Well, I don't know, a few tournaments back, but we, you know, it was qualifying.
Kazakhstan.
I think it's Kazakhstan.
Yeah, England, Kazakhstan, that
yeah,
rings a bell.
Yeah. We haven't invaded Uzbekistan.
No.
And the last one, which I mentioned earlier, we've never invaded the Vatican City.
Well, there we go.
Well,
that would be a bold move by the British Empire. Nelson rocks up and takes on the Pope. Yeah. I can't imagine he'd be in there for very long.
No, I can't. Okay, folks, so this was Planet Porky. Ben, thanks once again for joining me. And I hope we have enlightened you in the art of diplomacy and science. Some of the people I'm talking about now will definitely be retired. They'd have to be because they were older than me then, and a lot of them are dead. But the sports reporters on all the national newspapers had a racket where, because they flew so often, they all had MRs.
Yeah.
So whenever they were doing, for instance, Spurs versus Inter Milan, or Manchester United versus Bayern Munich, or something like that, And we had big travel desks in those days. They always took their mistresses. Every one of them had a mistress, right? They had lovely houses in the home counties, four-bedroom detached houses. They had a very happy family. They had children growing up and all that. But they all took what in those days we would have called a bird with them on a foreign job.
Well, I could have guessed, Porky, that pub was in Norwich because that is such a backward way of thinking. I mean, imagine. Yeah. So you're on the brink of being one in the top sort of pubs as far as camera determined. Yeah. So what do? You don't get into it. You throw your toys out the pram and you basically punish your drinkers by taking all the real ale off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such retail suicide, isn't it? Well, I just cannot get my head around that one bit. That's the sort of flat earth backward thinking that the County of Norfolk's renowned for, in my opinion.
The ones we didn't invade, for instance, were Andorra. Well, Andorra's not even a country, it's a field.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.